creamer of steam. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of scotch, heat up a pan of stand, throw in a handful of dick, that'll do. Then return to the carafe of mash upon a tray of ray. I'll lick a spoon of show. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe.
Network. The streets of Baghdad were quiet today after Iraq's prime minister imposed a daytime driving ban. Many fear yesterday's death of al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi will result in more violence. President Bush said his death does not signal that U.S. troops will be coming home anytime soon. U.S. officials are examining information found at the safe house where Zarqawi was hiding. U.S. forces have already made dozens of arrests based on items they found, including documents, hard drives, and digital cameras. An Iraqi man's body arrived in Washington today to undergo forensic testing. Investigators believe Marines murdered the man, then planted evidence to make it appear he was an insurgent. In Gaza, Hamas's military wing has called off a truce with Israel that follows an Israeli attack on suspected Palestinian rocket launching sites, which mistakenly killed seven family members picnicking at a beach. On Capitol Hill next week, Congress will send a $94.5 billion funding bill to President Bush. Nearly $66 billion is earmarked to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of that money could be used to establish permanent U.S. military facilities in Iraq. In Washington, a federal appeals court has sided with the Bush administration about wiretapping internet phone calls. The FCC has backed the decision, which says all equipment must accommodate police wiretaps under the 1994 Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act. In Washington, the State Department says the U.S. will convene an international meeting to discuss the future of Somalia. Earlier this week, Islamic militia captured the country's capital and ousted U.S.-backed warlords. In Oklahoma, criminals who engage in certain sex crimes could now face capital punishment. The governor has signed into law a measure that makes anyone convicted twice for rape, sodomy, or lewd molestation of children under the age of 14 eligible for the death penalty. In Texas, the governor plans to install hundreds of night vision cameras on private land along the Mexican border. The $5 million proposal would include putting live video on the internet so that anyone can report illegal immigrants on a toll-free hotline. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay left Congress today. He's been indicted on campaign finance charges in Texas. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. trade deficit rose in April to $63.4 billion after 2 months of decline. Surging oil prices and a flood of imported goods from China are credited. Bankrupt auto parts maker Delphi has announced a deal with the United Auto Workers and General Motors. Part of the deal involves buyouts to hourly employees who aren't eligible for early retirement. Baggage handlers and ramp workers have also reached a deal with bankrupt Northwest Airlines. The new contract cuts wages 11.5%. United raised its domestic fares by $5 to $10 each way today, a move its competitors are expected to match. It's reportedly the sixth fare increase of the year as airlines scramble to keep up with rising fuel costs. The SEC is investigating the stock option practices of software designer Intuit. Intuit, which makes TurboTax software, says it's voluntarily cooperating. Polo Ralph Lauren says it will no longer use fur in its apparel and home collections lines. It's the first major designer since the mid-1990s to abandon fur. Consumer Reports says the Honda Civic, Ford Focus, and Mazda 3 are the best choice for new drivers. The report also says teenagers should avoid SUVs because they're harder to handle. Light sweet crude settled at $71.63 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 47 points, NASDAQ down 10, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
There's no such thing as a political prison. All prisons are political prisoners. All trials in America are political trials. And when you go into jail, you see that. Because you see that 90% of the people in jail are black. That's what you see. You see that 90% of the people are young.
Show that takes a look at the week's events from every angle, even from down under. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. Fourth Estate Radio is brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Get in on the conversation by calling 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. And now, your trans-global hosts, John Fox and Bruce Birch.
Alrighty, people. Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio for another Saturday night or Sunday afternoon, depending on where you reside. I am John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and over on the other side of the planet is my mate, Bruce Birch. How you going, bud?
What's up, John? How you doing, buddy?
Alright, man. Alright. Let's do housekeeping first before I go on my first, you know, spew of the night. As usual, we're chatting at headonradionetwork.com. Click on the chat link, dump into the pool. We're blogging at fourthestateradio.com and headonradionetwork.com. Streaming brought to you by the White Rose Society. And, and the show, as usual, brought to you by the Council of Carpenters and Millwrights of West Virginia and... I'm making my adjustments as being requested. And anyway, Bruce, I want to talk about mythology a little bit today, and not the normal mythology. I want to talk about the mythology of Zarqawi.
Zarqawi.
Yeah, something like that, because as I've followed the last couple of years, this guy has done some amazing things for a guy with a peg leg. But you know, we're gonna get there, and I'm really kind of curious to because I'm very skeptical of this whole thing that went down with Zarqawi being supposedly taken out. Because my first reaction when I heard Zarqawi has been killed, my immediate reaction was, again? But
yeah,
that's,
you know,
me.
The number two man in Al-Qaeda, you know, they said the number two man in Al-Qaeda has been killed today, and I'm thinking, okay, every time they kill the number two man, they promote another guy to number two. And so, therefore, they'll still be killing number twos probably well into my old age, I would imagine.
It's all number two, if you ask me. But what I do want to do is, once we kind of get cooking a little bit later, I want to open up the phone lines to everybody, because I don't think I'm the only one that doubts this. And Bob Kincaid yesterday was quoting one of my favorite Bugs Bunny cartoons, where, you know, the whole thing with Muggsy in the oven. You know, if my buddy Muggsy was in here, do you think I'd turn the gas on like this? You might, Travis. You might. You know, that whole thing really plays onto this, I reckon, because he's been such a great propaganda tool for the coalition of the gullible,
the axis of iniquity.
Yes, that's it. But I mean, I have a lot of trouble with this one. So, you know, start lining up with the on the phones, folks. I mean, do you think I'm full of it? You know, should I be jumping up and down that this has happened, or what is going to be the impact of this? Whether he was who they made him out to be or not, what is going to be the impact? And I actually think Mr. Berg is Michael Berg's father, right? He's not too impressed with these moves, because he reckons it's just going to put more and more young men in worse danger over there, because, well, just seems kind of silly to him.
It does. By the way, I just wanted to mention that, you know, it's really cool kind of being, I just realized that I'd never really fully listened to the new introduction to the program. And I just wanted you to know, John, that it's really cool being a trans global host. And that's just,
you like that one, huh?
I really do like that. Trans global host. Now, what happens if we're on the same continent? Transcontinental hosts, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, we'll work it out. I mean, this works for the current situation. But yeah, I actually when I was writing the script for that, I'm kind of trying to come up with some sort of word. And well, I have an English major right here, so once my puny brain got lost in its own circles, I went, "What can I use for this?" And boing, ask and you shall receive. The script was suddenly written.
So this whole thing with Zarqawi, you know, I actually have a friend or an acquaintance. I'm not going to say what kind of acquaintance, because I was on my website today, John, and I looked at the visitors to my website, and I realized that one of them came from the Aberdeen Proving Ground that's the name of it, in Maryland, which is after I picked up the phone and called another friend of mine, he said, yes, that's where they used to do the electronic surveillance back in the 70s. And so I felt really important. Maybe I've made it onto the right list, I think.
Speaking of interesting visitors to websites. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. I'm sorry. Please go.
But the person that the acquaintance that I have, who is actually from Iraq and actually went to medical school with Alawi, says to me, told me this about a year and a half ago, that Zarqawi was completely made up. There is no such character. There was no such character. And, I mean, her credentials are impeccable. And so I was, you know, I really thought about that. I remember even saying that on the program at one point. But, you know, we're going to get into this some tonight. And it really is just the whole story doesn't seem to quite add up. I don't understand how anyone could have 1,000 pounds of explosive dropped on them, and they look like they got smacked around. I don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And Ross Story, even in their headline to one of the New York Times pieces, said that there are questions on whether or not the body we're seeing was Zarqawi, because there was a guy supposedly in the same location that looked like him. So, you know, I mean, is this some of our own guys, you know, ended up beating the bejesus out of him, and that's what we're seeing in the picture. You know, I'm trying to think back now. You know, we've been talking about this guy for a couple of years now, and one of the things that I haven't been able to, and I'll try throughout the show to go back and look through our archives, I thought I remembered the reaction of the Iraqis originally was, who? When he was suddenly brought up as a figure after major combat operations have ended. You know, it seemed to be, you know, the Iraqis are going, huh? Who are you talking about? And, you know, has the guy just been a myth? I happen to be leaning that way, and that, you know, could I just be so skeptical after all this time that I just believe nothing these people say? But we're coming up on our first break here, Bruce. So, you know, we're going to come back. I want to spend some time on this. We're also going to talk about the future of some things getting ready to happen here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to talk about the suicides at Guantanamo, aren't we?
I think we better. I don't know if anybody else is going to, so I think we better.
Yeah, man. There have been some statements made by officials high up over there that I'm so inexcusable in what twisted form of logic they came from. But I'll let everybody in on that in just a little bit. So, as usual, we're chatting at headonradionetwork.com. Stop by, check out the new look, dive into the chat room. We're blogging at Fourth Estate Radio and headonradionetwork.com. And Bruce and I will be back straight after this break. Pardon me. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
To the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
John, you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head on.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. Place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Open. All right, you're back on For the State Radio. This is Bruce Birch and my buddy down in Australia. He's the one sniggling and giggling over there. Is on the air with me. Welcome back. We were talking a little bit before we went over the break. We were talking about the myth of Zarqawi. The myth of Zarqawi. Now, I'm not trying to say that he was made up, but I think he was made up.
It's kind of like that thing of, you know, the thinking Monty Python, you know, the life of Brian, you know, someone who through out of control media became something other than what he really was. In the New York Times, I believe this is the piece that I've linked on our post today. They talk about the contradictory history of al-Zarqawi's life, and it says his life story was riddled with contradictions. He was close to Saddam Hussein. He was fighting Mr. Hussein. He had two legs. He had one. He was Palestinian. He was Jordanian. He was right-handed. He was left-handed. He was a cunning leader. He was an illiterate brute. And this has been back and forth.
It sounds like to me he needs to be on some lithium. You know, I'm thinking it's some schizophrenia going on there.
Well, no kidding,
so,
you know.
Was he a human being? He was a dog. He was a human being. He was an elephant.
Okay, and one of the things that it's I'm not sure if it's in this article here, but, you know, I do like that, okay, for a guy that's supposedly a devout Muslim, right, his mother passed away in the last few months. Never made contact with her.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the other thing that when a few weeks ago we had the new Zarqawi video. Remember that, you know?
Zarqawi with the white tennis shoes.
Yeah. Now see this, you know, the extra cutting room floor footage ends up coming out shortly afterwards. Now, where this came from, nobody knows. Now, first of all, if I were an insurgent leader, And
you know
and,
what they did
and,
was they got a bunch of pictures. They put them up on the wall, and then they got a bunch of kids together with darts and said, okay, which one do we think is our collie this week? And so they just, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. If I was an insurgent leader living like in caves or in some sort of stronghouse, I really, really don't think that even, you know, within a couple of days of getting the new American tennis shoes made in China, that they'd still be that white. Now, that happens to kick off the slightly skeptical part of my brain that says, you know.
Slightly?
Yes, yeah, slightly. Okay, I'm working on being understated for once, Bruce.
Okay.
You know, I mean, please. You know, the U.S. military has to react to it. Or the administration has to react to it and say, see, he's a buffoon, he's a freak, you know, and he can't even operate his own gun. Well, to me, that whole situation plays much more like it was an organized propaganda film. And of course, they didn't get combat boots in the right size for his costume, so we'll shoot it all from above the calf.
Is that a pig leg?
Well, yeah, and he didn't even limp.
Isn't he missing a leg? I mean, isn't there like a leg that's not there?
Yeah. So where when they show him marching with his troops in that footage, you see no hints of any kind of limp, and you sure don't see any kind of sign that there is a prosthetic device hooked up to whatever might be remaining of that leg, which would then house a brand new white American made in China sneaker.
If I remember correctly, one of the news stories that came out many months ago was that they had just missed Zarqawi, but that he ran away and they were not able to catch him. Do you remember the story? I remember the story very well. They caught everyone else who was in his convoy except him, and he got away on foot, running, literally. I'm not joking. This is the story that came out. And the question that I would ask is, did he have a skate on the leg that was a prosthetic device? Because that's the only way he could have. Perhaps he had some of those Acme rocket shoes, you know, the same ones that.
I just saw the inline skate blades popping out of his Al Qaeda designed, scientifically made prosthetic stub.
The Al Qaeda / Acme thing, like from Roadrunner, you know, the wolf, you know, he always has the. He clicks a button, and all of a sudden it's Al Qaeda on skates, and he's gone.
I'm sorry. The bionic prosthetic, it's about as believable as this guy surviving in one piece long enough for the soldiers to talk to him from 1,000 pounds of explosives in two hits. Now,
1,000 pounds of explosives landed on a bungalow the size that Magnum P.I. used to live in Hawaii, and guess what happens? He gets out with a scratch. His face was scratched. Did you see that? Look, if the U.S. military was to drop 1,000 pounds of explosives on this house, everything within about a 400-yard radius would probably be cleared completely, wouldn't you think?
Oh yeah, well I'll tell you what, man. If people want to go and check out at 12thharmonic.net, Gail found and links to a really really good piece where it shows what supposedly is the safe house before and after.
Where is this now on 12thharmonic.net?
.net, yeah, and you can see that there's a link to another blog that shows pictures of what. Is supposedly the bunker before and after, and you tell me how it's possible that anyone survived to where there was enough body to do an autopsy on. I'm sorry. It just does not play as far as...
The before and after pictures here are kind of... they're very dissimilar. There's not. It doesn't. I'm seeing. Look, it looks like there's some prosthetic trees there. Actually, you know what? The top picture there, if anyone's looking at this, follow along. The top picture there at 12harmonic.net looks like a Barbie house my sister used to play with when we were growing up, with the little fake palm trees and the. I don't see the pink Corvette in the garage there though. I don't see that. But it other than that, it's very similar.
Ken's out.
And on the bottom picture there, it looks like me. It looks like the same Barbie house after I I stomped on it and kicked it around and stuff and then dug a hole. Because that's the kind of guy I was growing up. But it does look like that. And actually, you know, the funny thing is that anyone, I'm looking at this hole in the ground. How could anyone live through that? Unless it was the hand of God.
Please don't go there.
Okay. Yeah, well,
that's a big part of the problem.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, religion. Okay, well, we're not going to go there tonight because we don't want to compare, anyone to the Nazis, right? Okay. I do have a question for you, though. How in hell could anyone live through that picture? You have to go look at this, folks. 12th Harmonic, 12thharmonic.net. This is just amazing. Just amazing.
Well, I mean, and
where were you at? You have a pipe somewhere? What's going on over there?
Sorry, I was actually trying to call up another picture, and we'll come back to this when we come back from our break. We're about a minute away from the bottom of the hour, and at a site called Urkunet or Uruknet, Uruknet.info. There was a post there called The Zakari Show, a pantomime for children of all ages. It has some very, very interesting statements on the history of the Mujahideen and Zarqawi himself, which we'll get into a little bit when we get back. So we're coming up on the bottom of our first hour here on Fourth Estate Radio. You're with Bruce Birch in Greensboro, North Carolina. Are you there? Are you actually home?
Yeah, I'm actually talking to you from the home studios this week.
Oh, well, right on. Well, Bruce from the home studios, me from Sydney. We'll be back straight after, some messages and some other stuff. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
You and the gang are out cruising North Carolina highways, but they're fixing up a little stretch ahead there, so you merge politely, and then some nuts whiz by half in the bag. Wouldn't you just want to see them whipped? But hey, whip zones are dangerous. I mean, they could be shelled or crushed or spread all over the highway. Heck, they could be put behind bars or in a bag. Whew. Drive safely in work zones. Don't be a nut.
Stay alert, stay alive in North Carolina work zones.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The manray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network. I am John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and over on the other side of the planet is my buddy Bruce Birch in Greensboro, North Carolina. And we're talking about the myth of Azarqawi.
Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm thinking, John. If he didn't exist, we would have to invent him. Now, I'm thinking that theory of... You know, there was actually an article at the Washington Post, right? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, there's an article at the Washington Post, but there's also this at this Arukhnet, which I've come across a few things here over the last couple of years, and just to read the top of this, it says Bush has the gall to hail the killing of Zarqawi while simultaneously asserting that nothing will change in Iraq. We are repeatedly told that Zarqawi was a mastermind of sectarian attacks in Iraq, but now that he is dead, absolutely nothing will change. The attacks will continue. Bush states all of this with the surety of a man that knows exactly who is carrying out the attacks in Iraq and that he can count on them to continue. I think that's an interesting point. Do not even for one second be foolish enough to think that the timing of Zarqawi's death was anything but a carefully planned operation designed to force the American people to find new faith in the righteousness of the war on non-existent Islamic terror, and thereby prop up the failed state that is America under the Bush administration. The official file on Zarqawi, whose real name was Ahmad Fadil al-Khalaleya, tells us that he was born in Jordan, barely literate. He became a petty criminal under the call to arms that came with the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan. After his time in the terror training camps of Afghanistan, Zarqawi returned to his home with the radical Islamist agenda. The interesting part of his file, the part that is generally omitted from such reports, is that the training camps in Afghanistan before and during the Soviet invasion of the country that Zarqawi attended were funded and run by the CIA, making Zarqawi and others like him assets of the U.S. government. So it makes me pose a question again that I posed before. When did Osama bin Laden come off of the CIA payroll?
Oh, I think that, Friday. No, but really, man, think about this for a minute. Okay, wait a minute. We got one guy, all right? We just blew the house completely into little small dime-sized chunks, and yet this guy comes out of the house unscathed. The picture on Arukhnet, or whatever the name of that website is, the picture shows a scratch, a bruise on the left side of his face and a scratch on his eyelid. I mean, it looks like he got the ever-loving hell beat out of him, but, you know, unless that's the only thing that's left is his head, It's impossible. There's no way. Now, the second thing is, he had one leg. He could not run, and yet, you know, they've shown pictures of all that. Now, the other thing is, how does this make us look? Now, if we're supposedly, you know, the premier world leader and army and all this good stuff, we got one guy who's 7 foot tall, right, or close to it, 6 foot something, who is on dialysis. We can't find him. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And then it took us 3 years to find this guy, and he was missing a leg.
Yep.
Oh.
Okay. Now,
I don't want to talk bad about the military, because, you know, obviously the military did the best they could with all this, didn't they? But it just, it seems like to me that, you know, the political situation was served better and has been served better for the right wing in this country, for the Zarqawis and the Bin Ladens to be out there and loose, than for them to be caught or to be killed. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like to me that we have reached a situation where it became more advantageous for the Bush administration to kill this guy than to have him out running loose. And the reason why I'm saying that is, you know, bottom line is because it all boils down to money. You know, as a friend of mine says, follow the money and you'll find the truth.
That is almost always the case, if not always the case. And another interesting thing, I went searching around quite a bit this morning on stuff on Zarqawi. And if you go to WayneMadsenReport.com and scroll down a bit, they have three different photos or excerpts, you know, frames from video of Zarqawi over the last couple of years, and then a shot of the gold-framed picture of his supposedly dead body. And just the tagger under the picture, it says, which one of these Zarqawis has tattoos and a prosthesis? Bottom is Zarqawi's body after after 500 pounds of bombs were dropped on his safe house. Photo was neatly matted and framed with gold leaf, obviously done by a 24-hour Baghdad version of Kinko's.
It's Binko's. Okay. That's just bad.
Well, we already have this gold framed picture of his body. Whose office is that going into? And after the autopsy, whose desk is his head or whoever's head it is going to be floating in formaldehyde in a jar on?
Okay, you know what? If one of those things do actually happen, you know, how sick is that? Okay? I mean, look, we seem to have a society that has just turned into the most bloodthirsty, and maybe it's always been bloodthirsty, and there's been this thinly veiled covering over it as if to say that, you know, we're not bloodthirsty and we're, you know, we're better than that, it's a new world order, blah, 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 blah. It just amazes me. I mean, what is it? Rumsfeld has a piece of supposedly has a piece of the plane in his office from the Pentagon, the one that supposedly hit the Pentagon, that allegedly hit the Pentagon. You know, and it's like these guys, they have all they do is they have these symbols of war. You know, and symbols of violence that seem to drive them every day. I mean, just, you know, all they do, like Bush said, you know, well, you know, he says, at one point he said that, you know, he wakes up every day and the first thing he thinks of is how to get at the terrorists, how to fight the terrorists. And it's just, you know, if that's all he's thinking about, well, that's obvious why the people down in New Orleans drowned. You know,
it's obvious
why we have widespread poverty within the United States. It's obvious that why we have tax cuts in the middle of a war. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It's a totally opposite world.
I totally agree, man. And you know, had a couple of things to go to here. You know, you're talking about this, you know, being bloodthirsty kind of thing, and kind of interesting that the just to kind of go back kind of on a side thing. The opening track on the new Tool album is actually called Vicarious, and it talks about this very thing that we live vicariously through the bloodshed of others, and that we deny this desire as being a reality, almost exactly what you said there, this kind of bloodthirstiness. And on the same vibe, isn't this exactly what Bowling for Columbine actually was about? Was, you know, why is there such violence in middle America? Well, maybe it's because all these kids see is everything that their lives are built on is the construction of things that commit violence.
Yes. And we should have little armies of little children going to their vacation Bible school classes in Baptist churches across the United States, learning how to be bloodthirsty little cretins, I think.
Well, and there's actually a cause. There's a new film that's just, I think, come out, and you can find it at sirnosir.com. And it's a documentary that's just popped up. I think I might have pointed you to it earlier in the week. It tells the story of the U.S. military desertions during Vietnam. Over 500,000. And it was probably the thing that brought the war to a halt finally, was the fact that it was the military that was revolting against their own defunct leadership, which we're in the same situation. So we're coming up on our quarter hour break again. So I mean, we're not running away from any of this. We're not going to cut any of this short. We don't have a whole lot lined up as far as multiple stories. We want to really talk about this, because this whole Zarqawi thing and the theater, which is the war on terror, is something that we really, really need to continue to pick apart, because this was a big play of cards, if you ask me, Bruce. Because, like you said, these figures actually work more to the agenda's position and goals by actually having these guys exist. And now they've been forced into a corner to try and destroy one for some political points, because they're hurting. So we're going to go out to this break. You're listening to Bruce Birch over there in North Carolina, John Fox down here in Sydney. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network, and we will be right back after this break.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Shut up.
This coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Oh my goodness! What are you guys gonna do to me next? You know, it's okay though. I think ELO was actually thinking of me when they wrote that. They were, you know, because I bring everyone down. But
okay, no. can I blow a hole in that whole thing?
Sure.
Okay. The story is told to me, and I do think I remember that.
Hello,
this comes from ELO fan in the chat room. The original lyric was not Bruce, it was Goose, which is
Goose?
A German word for
for waterfowl, perhaps?
I can't remember. I think it was something about great, I think, or something like that. It's like grouse, okay? And the Americans couldn't get it, and they just kept singing back Bruce. So the band ended up giving in and just singing that way live after a period of time.
Well, thank God for that. You know, I've actually, you know, all my life, people have been giving me crap about Don't Bring Me Down, Bruce, with that song. So, you know, hey, I'm okay with it. It's fun. It's great. It's fantastic. Now, the only thing is, you know, when are we gonna write a song about the same kind of music about Al-Musab al-Zarqawi. I'm trying to think of the lyric that would match, but
it's kind of hard to get a rhyme going, too. You were mentioning before that I had something from the Washington Post, which I do. Also on Mr. Zarqawi. And it seems that, you know, not everybody's buying into the whole Zarqawi story. You know, they might be buying into that he's dead now, but all that he was made out to be. And the Washington Post has Zarqawi helped U.S. argument that al-Qaeda network was in Iraq. And the top of the article says, from the moment President Bush introduced him, I like that terminology, to the American people in October 2002, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi served a crucial purpose for the administration, providing a tangible focus for its insistence that Iraqi President Saddam Hussein was linked to al-Qaeda terrorist network responsible for the attacks of September 11. So, I mean, even the Washington Post is saying he was introduced to us.
Well, you know, okay, yeah, they're saying, and you know that there are long-standing CIA contacts with the Washington Post, right?
Well, yeah, but you know, I mean,
going back to the,
I don't trust our media these days, but even even, you know, the Washington Post is having, they're even sliding in these wordings of introduced to us, not, you know, came into prominence. It was introduced to us because he really wasn't a factor until he was made a propaganda factor, as far as I can believe, you know. And the fact that he gets nailed so soon after the dodgy video, you know, I have a lot of problems. I have a lot of problems with the whole thing, but Gail and I have been suspect of the whole story since day one. You know, and actually, in a post thing, they continue on saying, after the toppled Hussein and the subsequent rise of the insurgency against occupying U.S. forces, Zarqawi's presence in Iraq was cited as proof that the uprising was fermented by al-Qaeda-backed foreign fighters. Now, the simple fact that the area that he supposedly was in control of under Saddam's regime was the area of Iraq that Saddam didn't even control. And if he had any activities outside of that area, Saddam would have had him wiped out. He never would have let him exist in such a form.
Oh, the insanity of the stories, the webs we weave. The tangled web we weave.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to tangle the web up a little bit more because I do believe we have Jim on line one. Hey, Jim, how are you doing tonight? Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Top of the
Not bad, man.
Good, good. I understand that one of you is traveling to Washington tomorrow, correct?
Yes, that would be me, Jim. I'm the traveling gypsy of the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, Bruce, that's great. Are you going to be staying near a metro stop?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to be staying near the metro stop?
Yeah, more than likely.
In red?
I'm not sure yet, exactly. I'll know better when I get up that direction.
Well, if it isn't red, just take the whatever train you're on to either Metro Center or Gallery Place, and then get on the red line and go to DuPont Circle, come out of DuPont Circle, half a block off on the right, you'll have Connecticut Avenue, Florida, and then you'll have the hotel.
Actually, you know, I've been up there a couple times. Usually, the times that I've been up there to that hotel for a conference, I ended up driving which is probably not the best thing. But
oh, it's okay. Just take Mass Ave straight over to DuPont Circle.
Yeah, I love the restaurants up and around in that area. They're
fantastic. Oh, there's some wonderful things, places up in near Columbia Road.
Yep.
Lots of ethnic places and things like that. What's this about our friend Mr. X, whatever you want to call him, who sort of got two 500-pound bombs put in his dune buggy a couple days ago?
Yeah.
Is there a doubt that it is he, or could it be someone else?
I think the doubt is that I think the doubt that we're talking about tonight isn't so much that it was that it wasn't him or was him that was killed. The doubt that we're looking at is that he was never really the power that they claimed him to be in Iraq. That maybe they're using him as sort of a mask to cover the fact that there's a civil war going on there between Sunnis and Shiites. And they're that it's quite possible that they're trying to use him as the cover for just a war that got way out of control from the very beginning.
That's a good thought. Very logically arrived at, I'm sure. But you know,
well, and the other thing too, Jim, is if you think back, you know, in all the insurgent attacks that have taken place over the last couple of years. The only ones that we have actually seen ever actually caught or tracked back have been situations where we've found, British soldiers dressed up as Iraqis in vehicles full of explosives. So if we're seeing signs that the coalition is actually engineering some, if not many, of these attacks, then Zarqawi plays to that as being able to have a boogeyman poster boy to bring out whenever it's necessary.
Well, that gives him a raison d'etre, you know, a reason for being. But, you know, gentlemen, you've got to remember one thing. When you get into pay grades this high and deeds this, well, shall we say, deeds like this that have been committed, it is axiomatic that nothing is really actually as it appears to be.
Yeah.
I think you can operate on that particular rule of thumb, and you probably won't be too far from the truth.
I'm with you, right? I'm totally with you there, Jim. And in these situations, I almost automatically have seething doubts, and I have to go and read more until I'm either assured that the accounts are reputable, or you, more often than not, my worries that it seems to be just made up out of whole cloth, you know, prove more true than not.
Well, you know, disinformation is an art as well as a science, you know? It is.
Sure it is.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
absolutely.
I'm not saying one way or the other, but regardless of whether or not it was the real person who was killed, the real Zarqawi, or the body double or whatever you want to call him or anything, number one, there are 15 more to take his place. Number two, I think Muslim burial dictates that the body be interred within 24 hours, and that's just going to cause a lot more problems between us and them, in the sort of like Pink Floyd would say, and it's going to create more enmity, and it's just not going to solve a whole lot, and that the death dividend of this terrorist, I'm afraid, is not going to be nearly as high or as possible as we might think.
Absolutely, and you know, there will always be another real or imagined boogeyman to take this guy's place, so killing him off can only prove, in the hopes of the administration, to be some sort of plus points, because they'll always be able to come up with another one to continue the same kind of, you know, boo factor in the media. So this is why we wanted to do this tonight, because we have doubts about exactly who Zarqawi was to start with. And, you know, we've had the wool pulled over our eyes before, and we need to seriously look at this. And like you said, you know, whether he was real or not, now what does his death actually mean to what's going to happen over in Iraq? In real terms and in political terms.
Well,
so, I mean, that was the whole point.
In certain other terms, you know, it's like Voltaire said about God. If he did not in fact exist, it would be necessary to invent him.
Well put, Jim. Well put. And with that, we're coming right up on the news break. So thanks
well,
for ringing in, mate.
It's joke. Doggone it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hang on through the news. We'll do your joke when we come back. And then we've got a couple other people waiting online. So hang on tight, and we'll get your joke in before we move on. So, folks, you're listening to Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. We're putting Jim on hold, and we'll be back after the news on the Head On Radio Network.
From another time, it inspires the baby's questions.
What's that?
For their mothers as they rhyme. But no one stopped to think about the babies or how they.
This is the Quality News Network.
The streets of Baghdad were quiet today after Iraq's prime minister imposed a daytime driving ban. Many fear yesterday's death of al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi will result in more violence. President Bush said his death does not signal that U.S. troops will be coming home anytime soon. U.S. officials are examining information found at the safe house where Zarqawi was hiding. U.S. forces have already made dozens of arrests based on items they found, including documents, hard drives, and digital cameras. An Iraqi man's body arrived in Washington today to undergo forensic testing. Investigators believe Marines murdered the man, then planted evidence to make it appear he was an insurgent. In Gaza, Hamas's military wing has called off a truce with Israel. That follows an Israeli attack on suspected Palestinian rocket launching sites, which mistakenly killed seven family members picnicking at a beach. On Capitol Hill next week, Congress will send a $94.5 billion funding bill to President Bush. Nearly $66 billion is earmarked to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of that money could be used to establish permanent U.S. military facilities in Iraq. In Washington, a federal appeals court has sided with the Bush administration about wiretapping internet phone calls. The FCC has backed the decision, which says all equipment must accommodate police wiretaps under the 1994 Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act. In Washington, the State Department says the U.S. will convene an international meeting to discuss the future of Somalia. Earlier this week, Islamic militia captured the country's capital and ousted U.S.-backed warlords. In Oklahoma, criminals who engage in certain sex crimes could now face capital punishment. The governor has signed into law a measure that makes anyone convicted twice for rape, sodomy, or lewd molestation of children under the age of 14 eligible for the death penalty. In Texas, the governor plans to install hundreds of night vision cameras on private land along the Mexican border. The $5 million proposal would include putting live video on the internet so that anyone can report illegal immigrants on a toll-free hotline. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay left Congress today. He's been indicted on campaign finance charges in Texas. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. trade deficit rose in April to $63.4 billion after 2 months of decline. Surging oil prices and a flood of imported goods from China are credited. Bankrupt auto parts maker Delphi has announced a deal with the United Auto Workers and General Motors. Part of the deal involves buyouts to hourly employees who aren't eligible for early retirement. Baggage handlers and ramp workers have also reached a deal with bankrupt Northwest Airlines. The new contract cuts wages 11.5%. United raised its domestic fares by $5 to $10 each way today, a move its competitors are expected to match. It's reportedly the sixth fare increase of the year as airlines scramble to keep up with rising fuel costs. The SEC is investigating the stock option practices of software designer Intuit. Intuit, which makes TurboTax software, says it's voluntarily cooperating. Polo Ralph Lauren says it will no longer use fur in its apparel and home collections lines. It's the first major designer since the mid-1990s to abandon fur. Consumer Reports says that Honda Civic, Ford Focus, and Mazda 3 are the best choice for new drivers. The report also says teenagers should avoid SUVs because they're harder to handle. Light sweet crude settled at $71.63 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 47 points, NASDAQ down 10, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
air of 40 State Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 1-877-4 head on. That's 1-877-443-2366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
All right, you're back on 4th State Radio. This is Bruce Birch and my buddy John Fox. He was down there. We were just arguing over who was going to open it up. And so he just, I told him to go ahead, and he refused to do it. So so what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to turn it over to my honey, John Fox. John?
All right, man. Well, we've been talking about the insanity of Zarqawi, but before we get on, we actually still have Jim on hold because he wanted to tell us a joke. Jim, you still there?
Jim.
Yeah.
Hola, Jim.
Yeah. Right,
there he is. So what was this joke you had for us?
Pandora's Box. But listen, this joke has nothing to do with misogynism or hair color, okay?
Okay.
Okay, a couple in their car at Bakeout Point were going at it hot and heavy. And her male companion was saying to her, "Please, let's get in the back seat." And she says, "No, I don't want to." And so the car fogged up. You could write your name in the windows and everything. Time passed. He says, "Come on, please. I want you to get in the back seat with me." And finally, out of exasperation, the guy says, "Well, why not?" And her reply was, "I want to stay up here with you."
Okay. No,
he's not getting lucky, huh?
You know, that type of mentality sort of reminds me of the type of mentality that we have been alluding to earlier, okay?
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Right. Okay, no worries, Jim. Thank you for that. I thought I was wondering if it was a thing about, you know, right-wing families and women's place in the world. I wasn't quite sure where you were going there.
Not the wrong place, but I just thought to myself, well, you know, why not, okay?
Absolutely, man. You got to take your opportunities when you can get them. Thanks for ringing in again, Jim. And we have, do we still have, I think it was Luke on line two. Is that right, Agnes? Do we still have him there?
Hi, guys.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Well, isn't this the same Zarqawi who we kept hearing all the time was the one leading the defense of Fallujah when they went in there and blew Fallujah mostly off the map? I mean,
that would be the same.
This guy does everything. I mean, really.
Yeah, this guy, I'm telling you, I mean, you know, if this guy were any more fantastic, he would be a super friend. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's one of those things. I think this is like they used to years ago. They don't do it, I don't think, as much anymore, but used to, you know, when they'd have in towns, they'd have all these small unsolved crimes. They'd pick somebody who just died and said, "Well, he was the one that did it." You know, that way they could clean their books off. I think that's what Zarqawi was. Anything, they didn't have anything, if they didn't know who it was, well, Zarqawi did it, of course. You know, I mean, that's why they'd probably be in about five places at once. You know?
Where'd this fly come from in my soup?
Yeah.
Oh, that damn Zarqawi's in the kitchen.
Like you say, I think he did exist as a person. But like I say, I think they actually just PR'd, build him up as high as they could. You know, as he said, they made him the boogeyman.
Yeah. Absolutely. And now that I'm thinking about it, this guy's been more omnipresent in Iraq than Ed Koch was when he was mayor of New York.
It's like I used to say about Joe Biden. I said, you turn on a red light on a camera, he'll appear magically. I think the same thing was true as Zarqawi.
Well, if that were true, you know, they would have caught him a long time ago with the laser sight. Anyway, but the...
But you know what? I'm beginning to think, you know, every once in a while we kept killing the number two in Al-Qaeda. I could just tell my friends, I said, I think he wears a hockey mask and his name is Voorhees. I don't care what you tell me. We keep killing him and he comes back.
No doubt. Luke, I'm thinking the real thing is that the Zarqawi character, you know, the number two man in Iraq is actually Jason, right? Has to be.
Well, but I mean, it is one of those things. I think they just built him up that way. They could always say, you know, there's somebody out there we still haven't got, like Bin Laden. You know, it's one of those things. You wonder if they ever catch Bin Laden, if they'll let anybody know.
I think he's probably already been, I mean,
they want somebody out there. They've got to have somebody out there to be the bad boogeyman. That's why we've got to keep all the terrorism stuff in place.
Yeah.
So,
as I've said in my other show that I ridicule the scared thing. I really do. And Luke, you touched on a really important topic there, and that is that the American public has been conditioned over the last 5 years to live in fear of some evil brown man in the Middle East, and, you know, who by the way, is on dialysis.
Well,
I mean, you know,
you notice, though, they're making so much out of this thing with the, and I mean, it is a big thing, this thing with the catching the people up in Canada, you know, gathering all this, they say ammonium nitrate. But do you remember about 2 years ago, they had a case that I believe was down in Texas, where they'd caught this right-wing group that was doing the same thing, but all of a sudden it just kind of went away on the radar.
Yeah. That wasn't actually that long ago. There was a situation in, I'm sorry, it wasn't Texas. Maybe there's another situation in New Mexico.
And
Colorado, where right around the Four Corners area, which is supposedly very well known for being home to many of these right-wing extremist militants, who, by the way, are now down on the border, you know, with the Minutemen. But, you know, they caught these guys who were, they actually were stealing explosives out of army depots. Isn't that right?
Hmm.
So, right. Know, yeah, and they caught them, but I don't think they found all the
explosives. Oh, the one where they stole the dynamite and stuff. Oh.
Yeah.
Where they,
yeah.
I think they'd hit mining companies or something like that, and they'd hit a couple of them.
And stole
a whole bunch of stuff. But no, there was one they'd had, this was a couple of years ago, where it was down in Texas, where they'd found this group that had been amassing things like ammonium nitrate. And they started investigating, and all of a sudden they found out it was this right-wing group, and all of a sudden the stories on it just quit.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm going to go on and let you talk to some other people, but I've got a new saying you'll like, I think. I may have told this to you, I hope I didn't. But just remember the motto: crazy comes naturally, stupid takes a lot of hard work, and we know how hard working our president is.
All right, mate, I got a little bit of audio here to add into that, and I think you'll appreciate this. Sorry, having to do a little bit of technical jiggery-poo and this.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
And that's all I have to say on that.
Y'all have a good evening.
All right, mate, thanks for running in.
Thank you so much, Luke. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio. If you also want to get in on the radio program and take a part in free speech and we'll even pick up a dime for you, so it's even free speech, pick up the phone, 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. Or you can send us email, bruce@brucebirch.com or john@fourthestateradio.com. We'll be right back after these short messages.
It goes away. I'm the best and more of nothing in my life. No one colored clay in individuality, not
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. and when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of manicism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight manicism.
Protect yourself from manicism. Log on to fightmanicism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Since the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air. And it was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap, renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel man.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Head on. He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
No, man, Jimmy sang those words about, by the way, this is Bruce, you're back on Forth the State Radio. Jimmy sang those words back in 1970, and we're still trying to get some freedom out of this whole deal, aren't we, John?
Yeah, and I sometimes really wonder if the average American actually understands what freedom actually is. A couple weeks ago on that Australian current events comedy show, The Chaser, their American correspondent guy who does a bit of a thing, whatever, in the States, went and asked about freedom or what is good about America. And all the white people within three words of whatever their statement was, they freedom, 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 freedom. And then they asked any African-American bloke, and freedom never entered the conversation except for this one guy who I cannot say exactly what he said George Bush to do to a particular part of his body. But
was it with a pitchfork or was it with a Coke bottle? That's all we're going to say.
Neither. Something more along the line of that dominatrix that was talking about Bush's hiring practices.
Before we get too far in this, I want to let you know, remind folks, you can get in on the program by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can also jump into our chat room where right now we're talking about raising Washington, Jefferson, and who else? Madison, I think, raising them from the dead to lead a second revolution.
So dudes, come into their headonradionetwork.com, click on the chat room. It'll shoot you right in there to our wonderful chat room where folks hang out and have a damned good time. John,
all right, man.
We're still on Zarqawi. Do we want to shift away from Zarqawi, or do we want to stick around with him for a minute?
Well, I got kind of one more thing, just because I find it interesting that that it seems as though the media is not, as a whole, kind of buying on to this story completely. Okay, another piece from the New York Times says, I'm looking for the good bit. The bits and pieces scattered Saturday through the ruins in Habib were the remains of the American airstrike that killed Mr. Zarqawi and five others Wednesday when a pair of 500-pound bombs obliterated the brick house and left a crater 40 feet wide and deep. A big hole, sir, said Sergeant Major Gary Rimpley, 46, of Penrose, Colorado, who reached the scene shortly after the bombing. On Saturday morning, the bodies were gone, including the body of a girl. The rubble had been picked over for the most useful bits of intelligence. Even the crater had been mostly bulldozed and filled in. Along with the scraps, it was mostly questions that remained. Chief among them, how Zarqawi, the terrorist leader killed Wednesday in an airstrike, could have survived for even a few minutes after the attack, as American officers say he did, when everything else around him was obliterated. Concrete blocks, walls, a fence, tin cans, palm trees, a washing machine, everything the Habib scene was shredded or blown to pieces. It seemed puzzling, too, given the destruction and the condition of the other bodies, how Mr. Zarqawi's head and upper body, shown on televisions across the world, could have remained largely intact. That's the New York Times.
Could it be that the media is waking up and smelling the coffee?
Well, I mean, you know, there have to be a point where if you were playing, you know, for the administration, that you'd have to start becoming afraid of the people.
Their political capital, the Bush administration's political capital, has pretty much been squandered. I mean, you know, they are no longer wielding the same kind of power they did 4 years ago. You know, they used to wield the power with the media where they granted so few interviews and had so few press releases that the media would do anything to get anything out of them. And at this point, the media is just, you know what, screw you people. You know, they're actually beginning to do their jobs to a certain degree. Now, there are those that, of course, will not and will refute, like Chris Matthews. What a shill. You know, but there are those like David Gregory and a few others that are actually, you know, of course, our good friend Helen Thomas, you know, who are actually standing up and are saying, no more, we're not going to take this crap from you anymore. We're going to report the news. Now, I'm always highly suspect of the New York Times.
So am I.
Primarily because of Judy Miller and her little publicity getting stunt there and going to jail, you know. But you know, not only that, but you know, they have you know, some of those writers there have flipped and flopped so many different times. It's really hard to say which side of the freaking thing they're on anymore. But I do remember, Stephen Colbert, you know, his little parody at the Gridiron Dinner, where he said, and to those in the media, I say, you know, write down what we're telling you and turn it out. And get, you know, it was funny because he basically nailed the media and said to them, you're not doing your jobs. What you are doing is taking press releases and calling that news.
Yeah, and just regurgitating the line that's been given by the government, and that's not how the media is supposed to work. Yes, you need to cover those statements, but you also need to go and see how they stand up against the facts. And they've become part of this thing, just like Steve Keen talked about in the interview last week, trying to judge things in a static situation without any And I think that's the media was working in a very similar fashion. They were taking just what was being handed to them, but not ever putting it back out in a way to check on it, to see if it actually does play out that way, and if it doesn't, why not? What is the other side or sides to a particular story? I mean, you know, we have been getting just, you know, the it's basically been dictation and regurgitation for a while, and we're seeing some signs within even publications that we've come to not trust necessarily, that you have some people that are starting to, they might have been writing these pieces even before, but for some reason the editors are now actually letting them hit some of the pages, but it's still a drop in the bucket compared to all of the echo chamber garbage that's out there.
Yes, it is, John, and it's actually kind of sad. Now, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that we want to, you know, a whole lot of other stuff we're going to try to, some of it we're going to try to get to tonight, not all of it, obviously. But I think that the media really has dropped the ball, and I think that the, especially with regard to the entire story in Iraq, what has happened has been that, you know, they have allowed themselves to become immersion journalists and become part of the story a lot of times, and at the their safety being at the mercy of the unit that they're covering, how can they be objective? There's no possible way in three shines of hell that they can be objective in, you know, being embedded journalists. It's impossible.
I agree.
You know, because are they going to talk bad about the unit that could frag them? I mean, you know, fragging in the military is a well-known thing. I mean, look at the guy, the football player. He got in Afghanistan. You know? So, I don't know.
There you go. There was another example of a convenience for a media play. You know what I mean?
Jessica Lynch.
Jessica Lynch. Another. That was the original one. And man, I remember when that happened. You know, Gail and I just sat there watching these news reports, going, "This is so fabricated. Like you couldn't." The only way that this could happen is if you wrote it, you know, and the fact that they put that poor young woman in such a situation where suddenly, you know, they're making all these heroic accounts of her rescue and all this other garbage, which, you know, war is not a pretty thing, you know, and sometimes things get really, really ugly, and I don't think it did anybody any service except for the politicians that want to perpetuate a lie to, you know, fabricate these things. You know, I mean, Jessica Lynch has pretty much disappeared, hasn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly has.
I mean, it, you know, she should be heralded as, you know, a hero of some sort, because she did give herself to go over there and ended up, you know, fighting for a lie, ended up being captured. But instead of hearing the story that the Iraqi took care of her and protected her, no, some fabricated bunch of nonsense that we, you know, that we had to go rescue her from more bad brown people.
Yes, those brown hordes of evil. Just, oh my God.
It's insane, and we're coming up on the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, so I can catch my breath, get another cup of tea, and you're listening to Bruce Birch over on the north side, and John Fox down on the south side on Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll see you right after this.
Nickelodeon asks kids to talk to their parents about,
you know
what?
Boy and girl stuff.
A girl in my school, in elementary school, had told me about it, but she told me the wrong thing. She told me something totally wrong. And when I asked my mom, I didn't know how she was going to react to the question. But then I figured it'd be better to ask her and get the right information. So I went out and I got my books and I brought pictures and I explained, this is what really happened. I was shocked my mom told me the truth, which was totally different from what she said. So that's how I kind of handled it. I realized that she was a little bit uncomfortable. Her top lip gets really skinny. It's like this. Sometimes I can feel my lip getting skinny because she's brought it to my attention before I didn't realize, and now I can feel it happening, and I'm kind of afraid.
But it doesn't work.
Talk together.
A part of the big help.
For more information, go to nick.com.
Help me a lot.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
I'm just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know
about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Because mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares.
I need a personal Jesus. Jesus! Hey, this is Bruce Burch. You're back on Fourth Estate Radio. My good friend John Foxy. Foxy Foxy is down there in Sydney, Sydney, Sydney. John, you with me?
Yep. And I just love hearing that guy doing a Nine Inch Nails song. It's just cooler, too cool for school.
It is. It's too school for ghoul. Anyway, I just want to let you know that I think it's spamtastic, everything that we've been doing tonight, and it's just, did I say spamtastic? I meant fantastic.
You did.
I know that we wanted to, I think we've beaten Zarqawi, we've dropped a couple more thousand-pound bombs on him, and so I'm sure he's all of his juice is gone, he's dusty at this point. So let's move on to something else, and that something else happens to be the situation that happened down in Guantanamo Bay. Was it today, John, that these guys decided to hang themselves?
Yeah, I do believe that this has just happened in the last few hours. But here, where is this? The Times Online, another really good source. says three detainees at the U.S. Navy base on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, killed themselves yesterday in an apparent suicide pact, marking the first deaths in custody at the military prison. President George W. Bush, or Resident George W. Bush, expressed serious concern about their deaths. But Rear Admiral Harry Harris, commander of the Joint Task Force at Guantanamo, this one really, really got my gall, Bruce, said the men were dedicated terrorists and jihadists. Quote, "This was not an act of desperation, but an act of asymmetric warfare committed against us." Now, is this like the most narcissistic comment you've heard in a while?
This is
that it's all about us?
He's a sick son of a bitch is what he is, Harry Harris. What kind of name is that anyway? Sounds like to me he's probably one of those guys that was invented. Another one of those invented people, Harry Harris. "This was not an act of desperation, but an act of asymmetric warfare committed against us." Okay, so all right, so what happens if I decide to go outside and get a picture of George Bush and put it on the ground and step on it, right? Which is like the biggest Muslim thing, you know? Is that also an act of warfare?
This is the thing, you know, and they're expecting these people that have been in detention for years without representation to somehow be able to have some sort of coordinated psyops thing? I mean, it's just absolutely insane. I think it was purely an act of desperation. You know, guilty or not, you know, being locked up with no representation or due process or the ability to face one's accuser, I reckon could, you know, drive someone to some pretty extreme lengths.
It goes on to say, this article, by the way, goes on to say that rumors had been rampant among the prisoners, according to Harry, that three detainees must die before they could go home. I don't understand what that's about. But, you know,
That's pretty scary. That's a pretty scary thing.
We have some very definite rights that were enshrined in our Constitution, okay? And not only that, but, you know, we also are you know, at one point, were signatories to the Geneva Convention, which basically laid out how you treat someone that you have detained as a result of war. First of all, we have not formally declared war, have we? I mean, how do you declare war on a noun?
And you have Bush, you know, uses all this war terminology when the power to declare war rests purely with the Congress, has nothing to do with the president. So, I mean, we have never declared war on Iraq, either in this campaign or, you know, back in the early 90s. And it's all war in the media, but not war in politics.
Well, you know, I hope these guys killed themselves, and that's just, you know, that is just absolutely terrible. But on the same token, you know, maybe some good will come out of it, and maybe people will begin to see this for what it is. The fact that this Harry Harris character, this Rear Admiral, yeah, he's a Rear Admiral, all right. Who's Rear is what I'm trying to figure out. But, you know, the fact that he would come out and say this just shows you not the desperation of the prisoners as much as the desperation of these people who are trying to continue this lie. You know, and you'll hear it Monday, ladies and gentlemen. If you listen to that right-wing radio bull crap that's out there, you'll hear it Monday. They'll come out and they'll talk about how it was all an act of war, and they were trying to divert our attention to this deplorable situation in Guantanamo Bay. And you can't pay attention to that, ladies and gentlemen. You just can't do that. You know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to make you feel sorry for them. And you know what? I do feel sorry for them. they've had no possible way of ever, you know, having their guilt or innocence ever proven. And that goes directly against the principles of our country. Completely against it. And you know what? To say that they're killers and they're jihadists and that's the reason. Well, if they are, prove it.
Yeah. Have a trial.
Have a trial. What the hell are they so scared of? That they can't prove it?
I don't know, Bruce. And this morning I caught a little bit of Laura Flanders' show, and she was playing some footage. I don't think she was on O'Reilly's program. I think she was on another program where O'Reilly was there, but don't quote me on that. And they got into a discussion about this very issue and about due process and whatnot. And O'Reilly was trying to say that we would be wrong if we weren't at war by evading due process. And at a time of war, you just turn around and shoot him in the head. And because we've declared war, we're right.
You know what? O'Reilly needs someone named, I don't know. You know what? I better not go there. Okay, I'm not going to go there. These guys, what they do is they continue to pump out this propaganda. Now, O'Reilly has good ratings. Why? I'll never know.
They're not as good as he makes out, and they're not as good as they once were.
Good. Maybe the American population is waking up. But you know something? What bothers me about that most of all is that, for instance, you know, like I said on the air earlier, or I told you earlier, you know, one of the hits to my website recently came from the Aberdeen Proving Ground up in Maryland. you know, well, you know, while on the one hand it kind of makes me feel kind of important, on the other hand, it also makes me wonder whether or not I'm going to get shipped off to some prison in Romania and hung by the testicles or something. You know, it really does this whole idea that this government can openly kidnap people and ship them, you know, to places unknown is just damn scary. And it completely goes against, the principles of our country. I mean, you know, we know that the CIA probably has engaged in this kind of behavior for the last who knows how long since World War II. But the bottom line is that this government, this present administration, has unabashedly admitted it, has said basically, you know what, we'll do whatever the hell we want, stop us.
Yeah.
And no one has risen to the occasion. Arlen Specter, that piece of crap in Pennsylvania, wouldn't know a damn hearing if it bit him on the ass. You know?
And he wouldn't swear anybody in either.
No, he won't swear anybody. I mean, this guy wouldn't know a hearing. I'm serious. He says, oh, we're going to have hearings on this NSA wiretapping. We're going to have hearings and get to the bottom of this. Oh, Dick Cheney, he's pissed me off now. Oh, we're going to. Yeah, right, Arlen. You know something? I mean, I mean, come on. Arlen Specter, it's all posturing. He's up for election. He's not going to do a damn thing. And meanwhile,
nope.
You know, the left hand's banging the gavel and the right hand's shaking the president's hand. You know, oh, we'll keep them at bay, George. Okay,
we'll keep up the theater, George. Just keep going on about your business. We'll keep up the facade, and we'll have hearings that ain't hearings, and we'll have officials come in and testify, but it's not testifying because they ain't sworn in, and they can lie freely because, well, they can lie freely, and they do. So they're, you know, it's a complete joke. And a couple months back, we had talked about The Money Masters, which was a documentary series from the late 90s that, I watched that again yesterday. Actually over 2 days because it's about 6 hours of stuff there. What's really interesting, and I had missed the first time around, is that, you know, this it's from 1996, so this is still in Clinton era. And they basically leave the thing set up that these money changers are looking for an event to bring the economy to a standstill like they did in the Great Depression. And it was weird. I didn't notice it the first time that I watched, and watching it yesterday, all of a sudden I, you know, kind of set in when this whole thing was filmed, because it's great. It does the history of the bank, of the banking systems from the revolution on out, and the fact that we actually don't own our own money, which is something that I don't think many people really, really understand. And if you haven't seen this, go to Google Video and watch all three parts of The Money Masters. And because I actually want to talk to Mr. Keene about some of this, because they talk about how taxes, unemployment rates, and interest rates are all used to make money for a privately owned bank, which is the United States Federal Reserve, and that this war is all part of their money game. And it's very, very strange that you look at a DACA that's 10 years old, and it's almost spot on. And we got to go out, don't we, Bruce?
Yeah, we do. We got to go out. It's it is about 13 minutes before the top of the hour. You are listening to Fourth Estate Radio, and glad to have you along the ride with us. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. John and I, well, we'll be right back. Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Guy James means straight talk and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network. When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. And we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Across the night was the moon that stole my slumber. Across the night
everybody. And that silver chair bringing us back into Fourth Estate Radio. We got a bit of a short segment here because, well, I got ranting at the end of the last one. This is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch over in North Carolina. And we were talking about, suicides in Guantanamo. We've been talking about the myth of Zarqawi. And where are we at, Bruce?
Well, you know, where we are right now, actually, I just wanted to, we try to do the whole Occupation Watch segment. I think we can cover that one in this segment. You know, we've been talking about Zarqawi all day long or all evening long. And, I wanted to give you the numbers because we try to do that as much as we can if we don't get off into something else. Since the war, this is the casual, the human cost of occupation, and you can go to anti-war.com/casualties, and you can go right to this number. Since the war began on March 19th, 2003, a total of 2,486 American soldiers have died in Iraq. Since George Bush trotted his little ass there out there on that ship there and right off the coast of California. And declared mission accomplished. Since then, of the 2,486 soldiers, 2,349 have met their end. So thank you, George, for declaring victory. And as far as on the Iraqi side of the conflict, anywhere from 150,000 to 250,000 have died. And there have been a number of reports that have put that number up around 6,000, John, just in the last 5 months. And that's official
numbers. You're kidding.
No.
You're kidding. Considering the fact that we don't keep body counts, that's outrageous that they have that much confirmed. So, I mean.
Yeah, those are from the Baghdad morgue. I think I covered this in one of the news stories this past week, but it was just. You know, it really is amazing when you really look at the realities of this. And there's a lot of, and people want to get in, if you want to really find out what's going on over there with Iraq, go online and do a search. Just pop into the search engine Iraq blogs, and you will happen upon a lot of blogs that are being written by, civilians, just people who are over there and trying to, live through our occupation. And they will tell you. I think as of 2 or 3 weeks ago, there are still parts of Baghdad that are only getting 4 hours of electricity a day. Still,
And they had more electricity before we went in. It was more reliable. And, and not that that's the be-all, end-all of anything, but after this much time, you'd be able to understand why maybe the Iraqis in general are really, really, really tired of living in substandard conditions as the rest of the world continues to profit handsomely off of this war. And if you have any doubts about how the fact that wars are purely an exercise in profiteering, you need to read War is a Racket from General Smedley Butler. And you can actually go to my website, 12thharmonic.net, and just search War is a Racket. Don't have a direct link to it at the moment, but you will find it there. And I have the entire speech-turned book where he explains very, very clearly how war is a money-making exercise. And it is the only racket in which the profits are counted in dollars and the losses are counted in lives.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I wanted, and this sort of ties into that, because the story that I wanted to talk about in our short segment here is the fact that congressional Republicans have recently, just as recent as Friday, killed a provision in an Iraq war funding bill that would put the United States on record against the permanent basing of U.S. military facilities in Iraq. So in other words, congressional Republicans have decided that it's okay for us to have a permanent footprint in Iraq. The $94.5 billion emergency, note I said emergency, spending bill includes $65.8 billion to continue waging wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's expected to be approved by Congress this coming week and sent to President George Bush for signing into law. As originally passed by the House of Representatives, the Pentagon would have been prohibited from spending any of the funds for entering into a military basing rights agreement with Iraq. But the Bush administration says it doesn't want to place any, quote-unquote, artificial timelines
on a U.S.
presence in Iraq, and that it wants to begin withdrawing troops when Iraqi security forces are better able to protect the country. But it has not ruled out permanent bases in Iraq. You know, and I just wanted to say this. You know, we're basically creating the 51st state. I think that's what they're doing.
I thought that was Australia for a long time, but I'm starting to think that we actually are trying to make Iraq some sort of extension of the U.S. territories or whatever. It's really, really just beyond sad, the state that we find ourselves in, you know, and how much of this is just based purely on lies and profit.
How much of it is based in purely in lies and profit?
I would yeah, say I mean, 90, like
99.9%.
Look, I know, and this is the thing that gets it to be so painful. Is why do we just continue to fall down these same roads, and you know, go lockstep with these people that have, you know, other things in mind. Anyway, we're coming right up on the top of the hour, so before I get completely tied up into a rant, Bruce and I will take a bit of a break. We're going to go to the news and see on the other side of it. You're with Bruce Birch and John Fox on Fourth Estate Radio on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The streets of Baghdad were quiet today after Iraq's prime minister imposed a daytime driving ban. Many fear yesterday's death of al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi will result in more violence. President Bush said his death does not signal that U.S. troops will be coming home anytime soon. U.S. officials are examining information found at the safe house where Zarqawi was hiding. U.S. forces have already made dozens of arrests based on items they found, including documents, hard drives, and digital cameras. An Iraqi man's body arrived in Washington today to undergo forensic testing. Investigators believe Marines murdered the man, then planted evidence to make it appear he was an insurgent. In Gaza, Hamas's military wing has called off a truce with Israel that follows an Israeli attack on suspected Palestinian rocket launching sites, which mistakenly killed 7 family members picnicking at a beach. On Capitol Hill next week, Congress will send a $94.5 billion funding bill to President Bush. Nearly $66 billion is earmarked to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of that money could be used to establish permanent U.S. military facilities in Iraq. In Washington, a federal appeals court has sided with the Bush administration about wiretapping internet phone calls. The FCC has backed the decision, which says all equipment must accommodate police wiretaps under the 1994 Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act. In Washington, the State Department says the U.S. will convene an international meeting to discuss the future of Somalia. Earlier this week, Islamic militia captured the country's capital and ousted U.S.-backed warlords. In Oklahoma, criminals who engage in certain sex crimes could now face capital punishment. The governor has signed into law a measure that makes anyone convicted twice for rape, sodomy, or lewd molestation of children under the age of 14 eligible for the death penalty. In Texas, the governor plans to install hundreds of night vision cameras on private land along the Mexican border. The $5 million proposal would include putting live video on the internet so that anyone can report illegal immigrants on a toll-free hotline. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay left Congress today. He's been indicted on campaign finance charges in Texas. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. trade deficit rose in April to $63.4 billion after 2 months of decline. Surging oil prices and a flood of imported goods from China are credited. Bankrupt auto parts maker Delphi has announced a deal with the United Auto Workers and General Motors. Part of the deal involves buyouts to hourly employees who aren't eligible for early retirement. Baggage handlers and ramp workers have also reached a deal with bankrupt Northwest Airlines. The new contract cuts wages 11.5%. United raised its domestic fares by $5 to $10 each way today, a move its competitors are expected to match. It's reportedly the sixth fare increase of the year as airlines scramble to keep up with rising fuel costs. The SEC is investigating the stock option practices of software designer Intuit. Intuit, which makes TurboTax software, says it's voluntarily cooperating. Polo Ralph Lauren says it will no longer use fur in its apparel and home collections lines. It's the first major designer since the mid-1990s to abandon fur. Consumer Reports says that Honda Civic, Ford Focus, and Mazda 3 are the best choice for new drivers. The report also says teenagers should avoid SUVs because they're harder to handle. Light sweet crude settled at $71.63 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 47 points, NASDAQ down 10, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together.
And now the final hour of Fourth Estate Radio. This is Conversation Radio, so ring Bruce and John on 18774 head on. That's 18774432366. Your voice is useless until you use it. Here's John and Bruce.
The city's changing, 'cause we are changing, and we're all.
That's right. Here's John and Bruce. Thank you, Gail, very much for that voiceover. I appreciate that. Gail is our wonderful British accented lady who is I think good friends with John. I'm not real sure about that, but
you might be able to say that. We could be close. You could say that.
Okay. Well, it's good to have you back with us, John. we talked about we headed off to that break talking about the jackbooted frenzy that is the Bush administration. And the fact that they want to put their jackbooted frenzy ass into the Middle East there. And you know, we want to make sure that people understand that we're going to be there for a while. And I think we've done that over the last couple of hours. Do you think we've made that pretty clear?
Yeah, I reckon so. I reckon so. You know, it's one of those things we were talking about it earlier that it wasn't a day for doing a million and one stories. I like doing a bit of a focus on, you know, who exactly was Zarqawi and who possibly wasn't he. And, you know, that's just kind of the way things need to be sometime. But we're going to talk about some lighter things at the moment. However, they are serious to a point, because we have some very interesting things taking place on our fledgling network here, the Head On Radio Network, Bruce. And starting with, on Sunday is a very special All Things, and you might be able to explain what that'll be and exactly why.
Yeah, for those of you who are actually listening to the program tonight, and you're going to get a little bit of a sneak preview as to what's going to happen tomorrow night. Tomorrow night will bring, quite a while, a number of shows to an end for All Things Reconsidered. All Things Reconsidered will actually, the last episode of that radio program will be tomorrow night. And I have lined up for that a number of interviews going back to sort of the inception of the program and some interesting audio clips of callers and interviews and some other stuff. And just basically a synopsis, if you will, of the program itself. And we're going to call it an end, John. I think there's a reason for that, and maybe you can enlighten us as to why.
Well, with every end comes a beginning, and starting on Monday, with the retirement of All Things, we will debut the Bruce Birch radio program, which will fill that gap between Guy James and Bob Kincaid. So you'll be now on daily from 5 to 7 Eastern Time every day. And the first 2 or 3 days, you are in D.C. with Guy at the Take Back America conference. Is that right?
That's going to be correct. Yeah, you've been hearing the commercials all night. You're not much gets by you, John. I'm telling you. You're pretty smart.
Yeah, well.
It's, yes, from 3 to 5, Guy James will be on the air there broadcasting live from D.C., and then I'll come on from 5 to 8, and maybe we'll sort of mix and match, and, you know, John or Bob will be on after that. So we'll see how well that goes, but the premiere show of my new radio program, which will not be called All Things Reconsidered, it will be called something different. Matter of fact, a very generic name, the Bruce Birch Radio Program, will debut Monday. So we're going to call an end to All Things tomorrow night and turn right back around on Monday and start the new show. And that'll be a daily show. So you guys will hear as much of me as you can possibly stand. And and for the foreseeable future, I don't see me leaving Fourth Estate Radio unless, of course, John finds somebody who's funnier. So, and that's always
No, man. The Fourth Estate is a particular dynamic, and until such time as I take on my daily show, which will probably happen in the near-ish future, Fourth Estate will continue on as it has, and we're gonna keep doing this Saturday night thing for a little while here yet. Sometime in the future, I will be taking on a late night slot, and that should be a bit of fun. But also, is it Monday and Tuesday, Bruce, that you're actually going to be taking an hour of Bob Kincaid's slot to expand the broadcast from the convention?
Yes. Yes, it is. And actually, I think that we have a promo for my new show Agnes has set up there. To run. John, you want to hear the new promo?
Yeah, go ahead. Run that, Agnes.
Go ahead and run that, Agnes. I'm sure she's got it coming.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
It ain't raining weeks, but the weather sure is
Right on, Bruce.
What do you think that special? But it was, that's the drive-by truckers. I just, you know, they're going to, one thing about this new, the new program, John, is that because I am a Southern boy, I'm going to try to, you know, slip in some of that Southern music in there, some of that Southern rock, as long as it's not, you know, racist or xenophobic or anything like that. You know, I don't want to play any of that stuff, but, you know, I do think that, you know, we are growing by leaps and bounds here, and we're adding something new every week. Now, the other change that's going to be occurring, or has occurred, as you, if you've been listening to the show tonight, you heard a new news feed. And we are now, I guess, going to be picking up a news feed from a fledgling news association called the Quality News Network. And you can go to their website if you're interested by going to qualitynewsnetwork.com. They are kind of like we are. They're growing and we're growing. So we created a relationship. And so we're going to be doing pulling their news feeds and running them during our programming. And so they get their exposure, and we get our exposure. So it's all good. We're all working together. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. And speaking of being being in this together in our greater family, I don't want to keep him on hold any longer because he's actually ringing in, and he always complains that we keep him up too late. I do believe we have the man, Union Man Wayne, on the line. Wayne, you there? Welcome to Fourth Estate Radio.
I sure am. And listen to me, you don't have to worry about me staying up later anymore. It's part of my schedule.
We've trained ya.
I mean, you know, that's just all there is to it. It's much too important. It's too great a show, you know.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you, man.
Well, it is a great show. And, well, this is exciting. I'm excited about Bruce's new show, as I'm looking forward very much to your show also. And, you know, hopefully that's enough of the light stuff. You know, I mean, we're on the message board. I mean, we're starting a revolution here, and you guys started the damn thing, and now you want to go to the lighter side. We ain't going to let you.
Well, we were only talking lighter is the fact that, you know, as opposed to all this heavy news content and trying to look through all the lies that are fed to us every day, looking at some of the actual facts that are the growth that this experiment of ours continues to take. And I'm looking so forward to Monday because, you know, I mean, Bruce is going to end up knocking me off my Randy Rhodes fix every day now completely, but... You know, I think this is going to be great, the fact that we're going to have Guy and Bruce down there. And there's going to be, like, everybody from the progressive angle at this thing, from what I understand. They're expecting, you know, Al Gore, and they're I've just seen quite the list of people that will be there. So I hope you grab some of these people, Bruce.
Oh, I already have a couple of these folks tentatively lined up, so I'm not going to say who just yet, Sirota. But we'll see how well that goes.
Well, you know, what's going on? What's all the woo-wooing about there, Fox?
I heard something that sounded like Sirota come out of his mouth there, and I thought he was dropping a very heavy hint on one of his possible guests.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I mean, you know, just get in talk, you know, in touch with Randy and tell her, you know. I mean, you know, maybe we could find her a slot, too. You know, what the heck?
We'd make her a slot.
Yeah, we would. Well, and tell her, you know, I'm sure you guys can afford to pay her twice as much as you're paying Bruce. Think she'll go for that?
I don't know if she'll go for it, but I reckon I could come up with that salary right here if we needed to put it up.
I mean, but listen, we're talking on the message board, we're talking about how, you know, to try and get younger people involved, and thinking about, well, maybe we should bring back some of the old revolution music, you know, from the 70s and stuff. And there was a song in the 70s, and I don't know who did it, but I remember the lines, and some other people on the message board seem to remember it too, so I've been assured that it isn't an LSD flashback. So, but there was a song, And part of the song said, "You've poisoned my sweet waters. You've cut down our green trees. The food you fed our children is the cause of their disease. Although you may be stronger, Nile, our time will come around, and we will surely shoot your people down." Yeah, now, your job, Mr. Fox, is to find out who wrote that song.
I'm scouring my brain right now and hoping that the my email box will go off like crazy in about 2 minutes here.
Does
so anyone
sound
who has
familiar at all?
It sounds very familiar, and I'm not sure if it's a traditional piece that maybe became big in the 70s, or you've got me on this one, Wayne. But I will find out because that okay. I think that's a fantastic lyric.
Well, and, you know, like we're saying, it certainly applies to today as much as it did in the – maybe even more so than it did in the 70s, I would guess, you know.
I think the late 60s and early 70s were a precursor to where we are now. And if it hadn't been for, you know, Nixon being caught and whatnot, we may have gotten to this point a lot sooner than we have. You know, because, I mean, they only got hijacked for about a decade before they came back with
right.
this idea of wanting to manipulate things from every angle.
Right, and you have to remember that at that point in time, the right was just starting on their idea to own and manipulate the media, which they have been extremely successful at.
I saw a graph talking about, I think this might have been at a blog called Spontaneous Arising, and there was a graph showing the number of companies that ran U.S. media, and there was there were over 50 companies back in 1987, and his line was, "Can you believe we're wishing for the 80s? Because we're now down to not six, but five."
There you go, buddy. There you go. But, you know, getting back to this, what's his name, Sakauri? However he's
yep. Name.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard that, I mean, the first thing that came to my mind was, what a bunch of bull. You know, and you guys mentioned it, and I know I've mentioned it before. You know, how anyone can believe anything these people say, and like I say, you did mention it. I mean, they can't even tell the truth about American war heroes' experiences or their death. I mean, I don't know if the Tillman family still knows the whole truth about their son.
And they've been asking a lot of questions, too, which suddenly their media spotlight seemed to run out of juice.
Yes. And did you see or hear that interview with who was the guy that got decapitated?
You're talking about Michael Berg's father.
Berg's, yeah.
Or Nick Berg's father, Michael, right?
Yes, yes. He's a brave man, yes. and I admire him greatly for what he said and for having the guts to say it.
Well, yeah. And he doesn't take being a pacifist lightly.
No.
And for
not.
Him being, and his idea of pacifism is not rolling over either. And, you know, I definitely have a lot of respect for him and the way that he has stood for his son's memory and keeping the context of what really brought on the beheading of his son.
He could pay his son no greater honor than to, you know, stick to his guns like he has. And, I think he's a very admirable man, very admirable man.
Absolutely, and the right wing that attacks him, saying that, you know, his son would be rolling in his grave, they should just hang their heads in shame because they have no place and no credibility to come and say these kind of things to someone like that. You know, I mean, he's a green, and he's not a green by convenience. He's always been a green, and he said in one of the interviews that I saw this week, he did say that, you know, this taking out of Zarqawi, whether he was who they say he was, is only going to create more violence.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you know, I mean, to a lot of them people, a greater thing couldn't happen. You know, whether that was him or not, whatever that was is now a martyr. And, you know, I mean, there were quotes of, you know, Iraqi men and people saying that, you know, they'd give up their whole family, you know, in order to avenge his death. They, you know, that it's not a good situation. It's not a good situation at all. So, I don't know, but like I say, how anybody could believe a word that these people say is just totally beyond me. I don't understand it. And, you know, talking about how Jessica Lynch has dropped out of the picture, for everybody's information, Jessica Lynch has just finished her first year of college. And, you know, her ambition and the reason she joined the Army was to have enough money to go to college to become, I think she wanted to become a kindergarten teacher. But she's, you know, pursuing a degree in education so that she can become a teacher. And the reason you don't hear about Jessica Lynch is because Jessica Lynch wouldn't cooperate with these people in this administration. She didn't want to be a hero. She wanted to be a little girl from a little town in West Virginia that goes to school and then comes back and gives to her community. And that's what she is trying to do, and she is to be admired also, as far as I'm concerned. Number one, for standing up to these people and saying, I'm not going to let you make up stories and lies about me. You know, let me go to school and leave me alone. And, well, I think that's admirable also.
Absolutely. Yeah, and what's interesting there, too, is, you know, you say that, you know, she joined the military just so she could get her education paid for.
That's
right.
Exactly.
And I mentioned earlier on the show about a website for this documentary, Sir No Sir. And it, with the billions that the U.S. government spends in direct advertising and video games to push military careers, there's actually a lower average population of military people who have actually gotten through college than the general population. And this actually surprised me. The average soldier, after getting out of service, makes almost 20% less than a high school graduate.
Oh, wow.
So the promises don't add up. I mean, most of those kids join up for the paid education and the GI Bill, but less than 19% actually ever get to complete a degree.
Yeah, that's an amazing statistic, isn't it?
It's kind of scary because they sell that package so hard to these young kids, setting up this society so that they feel like they're really up against it to try and survive once they get out of mom and dad's house. And for a lot of them, a military career is about the only guarantee that they have to be able to keep their heads above water.
Yes, it is. That's very, very true. But then you think of the kids that go to Iraq and come back. I mean, my God, think of the mental problems that some of these kids, well, that a big percent of these kids are going to have. I mean, what they've been put through, what they've seen, what they've been forced to do, my God, I think it would give anybody mental problems.
And all the funding for the programs that would take care of these men and women when they came back have just been gutted over the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, like, savagely. Bruce can probably speak better about that than anybody else, what has happened to veterans funding.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's atrocious. It is absolutely. And the crazy thing is that we are creating a whole new culture of guys who are going to be very similar to the Vietnam era veterans who came back from that war, you know, and what's going to happen is we're going to see a whole new crop of people in the streets as a result.
Yes, sir.
You know, so and this current administration and the people who are behind this current administration don't want to. I mean, they have no interest in funding any kind of social services safety net for these folks. So what's going to happen is they're going to come back from the war, and they're going to find that the VA will be very ready. You know, they'll go to the front of the line of the VA when they get there to start with.
And then after that, they will be swallowed by the system, and you'll never, you know, it, and, you know, in the 2010s, we will start seeing them showing up, well, probably even before then, I would venture to guess, but we'll see these young men and women start showing up at homeless shelters. I mean, we're already seeing some of the ones from the first Gulf War. But this occupation in Iraq, it, you know, has gone on and on and on and on and on, and what it has caused, you know, I mean, these guys are living under the constant threat of you know, IEDs or whatever. They never know when they're going to drive down the road if they're going to make it back alive.
No, they don't.
And no one can live under that kind of stress for very long without having some serious mental difficulties.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then, you know, another thing I always remind people, too, is, you know, the statistic of war dead is one. But then the wounded, I mean, where are we at that in wounded? 15, 20,000?
Yeah, or more than that. It's probably double.
It's over 20.
And you know, like, people, you know, I don't know, people envision wounding as, you know, some old cowboy movie or something. You know, it's only a flesh wound. These people are missing limbs, faces, half their, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of them think the lucky guys are the ones that died. You know, that's
you
a terrible
kidding there.
Statement, but think of what these guys are going to face. And this administration will abandon them just as quick as they possibly can.
Of course.
As quick as
they're only responsible for you to get you out of the womb. After that, you're fair game.
Exactly. And you know, if you have any honor of obligation, it would seem to me that veterans should be at the very, very top of the list. And, you know, we have so, well, we just have not held that up. We don't today with our, you know, we haven't, well, probably with our World War II veterans, we did better, you know, but after Vietnam, we abandoned those people. And we, our government, and, well, these people are just, well, they're disgusting, totally disgusting. And you got a, you know, supposedly commander in chief that was a deserter. Hey, yeah. You know, I'm sorry that he was a deserter. That's just all there is to it. So, I don't know.
Well, I think we're going to see it get worse before it gets better, Wayne. And, you know, these little fake victories that they're claiming are going to prove themselves out, as they have every single other time with this administration. These little fake victories always prove themselves out to be utter horse crap. And we will see, again, we'll see this whole thing with Zarqawi. It will be another false victory for these guys. You know?
How many, you know, guys were in lined up to take Zarqawi's place? You know.
As a bumper sticker says that I have, actually not on the car but in the trunk of the car, it's a magnet. You know the magnets I've got. It
yep.
says we are creating terrorists faster than we can kill them.
Ooh,
yeah,
I like
yeah we
that.
Are. Yes, we are. And you know, the fact of the matter remains, if Saddam Hussein was still in power, Zarqawi wouldn't have existed. Now, you know, he wouldn't have got away with that stuff if Hussein was there. And that's not to say he was a good guy. But we certainly haven't made the situation better. By far.
Oh, we've just created chaos. That's all.
Exactly.
We've just created chaos.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is, at some point, we are going to leave. And, you know, and then, well, then we'll see chaos more than what we're seeing at this point. So,
you know, and actually, I think there's a reason why we're there. Wayne, we got to take a quick break. Can you hang on until after the break?
Surely.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk to you in just a second. Okay. You're listening to Fourth Estate Radio here on the Head On Radio Network with John Fox and Bruce Birch, and Wayne's on hold, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back here directly.
We'll be right back. The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network. That's what I want.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Fourth Estate Radio, here with John Fox and Bruce Birch. And still on the line, we have our union man, Wayne. Everybody still on the line?
Oh, I'm still here, man.
Right on. Bruce?
Still here.
Si, senor.
Right on. Head count's up to three. So what's happening in any union news these days? There, Wayne, anything brewing as far as the workers these days?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, things are working better. I mean, we are, well, just last year, West Virginia was one of the few states in the union that gained union membership. And, well, I think that's a very good sign, and I think you're going to see that all over the country. In fact, all over the world, for that matter. It's, you know, people are finally coming to the realization that you need a union. You know, you can't, this trying to deal one-on-one with your employer just doesn't work. And, well, I have great hopes, you know, I have great hopes. And we have, talking about, one of the greatest things that can happen, and I'm telling you, that's why I try to tell people we have to get a Democratic majority, number one, so that we can hold Democrats accountable, and we can do that if they have a majority, simply because with a majority they have no excuses. All their excuses are taken away. And I've mentioned this before, and it bears repeating. I believe it was in 2003, Ted Kennedy introduced the Employees Free Choice Act. And it has been reintroduced every year. I think they did it again April 19th or something. And simply what the Employees Free Choice Act does is eliminate NLRB elections, National Labor Relations Board election. The way the system is now, and in the construction industry, we have a little bit more leeway than people in a factory or so because, simply because in, you know, construction, they're short-term jobs. You know, now, a construction union can file for an NLRB election with 30% of the employees signing cards. In other union, you know, in factory work and stuff, it's higher than that. But the way the process is, and we don't usually even try to go for election unless we have over 60% of the employees signed in a card, you know, signed a card. But then if you have that, then you go to the NLRB, you file for an election, then the NLRB sets up an election. Of course, the employer is then notified that that's going to happen. Well, you know, if the employer has any kind of influence at all, which most of them belong to this right-wing conspiracy, they could put that election off for quite a while. And in the interim, they harass and intimidate and coerce employees. And then, you know, when you finally get to the election, nobody, you know, you lose because they have, I mean, I've had, we did a campaign against a sheet metal contractor up here that bought two of his guys new pickups and they voted against the union, you know, but with the Employees Free Choice Act, the NLRB election is eliminated. If you go into a factory or a construction site and you get 51% of those people to sign a card, then the employer has to sit down and negotiate a contract. And in the old sit with the election system, all they had to do, even if you won the election, all they had to do was negotiate in good faith. There was no requirement to come to an agreement. And they, you know, mess you around for a year. They, you know, did everything they could so that you couldn't bring charges against them of not negotiating in good faith. At the end of the year, they'd come to you and say, we feel that you no longer represent a majority of our employees, and you had to start the whole process all over again. With the Employees Free Choice Act, they have 60 days. That they can, well, actually, it's 90 days, okay? If you don't come to an agreement within 90 days, then the thing goes to binding arbitration, and, you know, after 30 days after that, there will be a first contract. And we need that separately.
So you're saying that this facilitates them, facilitates the possibility to keep things from going into some sort of circular arbitration and actually give some sort of time frame that something actually has to happen as opposed to the standoff tactics that happened in the past without this type of legislation?
Right. There's some meat to this thing, you know. They have civil fines in this new legislation. Up to $20,000 per violation against employers found to willfully or repeatedly violate employees' rights during an organizing campaign or first contract drive. If an employee is wrongfully dismissed during an organizing drive and he's out of work for 3 months and the case is found against the employer has to pay him back triple wages, which we don't have now. You know, it puts meat into our labor laws, and that's what we need. Labor laws in the United States are a joke, or have become a joke, that's for sure.
I'm sorry about that. I was going to say you haven't got quite to the point now that if you're the union rep on job site and you actually mention the existence of the union to a new employee, you can be jailed.
No, we're not quite there yet, but, you know.
They're trying.
Everything else, and they've done everything else, you know. But it's, well, we desperately need this legislation. Now, you know, after there are over 200 co-signers to this legislation between the Senate and the House, which is, you know, I mean, we still have a long way to go, but, well, it's growing and growing and growing. And, you know, this is, you know, a lot of people like to badmouth Ted Kennedy, but you could say whatever you want about him. Ted Kennedy has always fought for working people. That's just all there is to it, you know.
I've agreed with you. I agree with you there. You know, even though the Kennedy family made huge amounts of money through basically legalized banking scams around the Great Depression, I think the later generations of that family have taken a much more kind of community approach to the way that they, you know, go about their lives. And yeah, I'm still a big fan of old Teddy because I think he does stand up for the average working American pretty well and has a good history of it.
Yes,
and
I refuse to hold sons responsible for the sins of their fathers. I'm sorry. You know.
Right. I am definitely of the same thing. As long as the sons have averted from the paths of their fathers, as opposed to just going, you know, keeping up the status quo because that was what was expected of them.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I think most of Joe's sons have a lot more moral value than the old man did.
You know, and Robert Kennedy Jr. I'm a particular big fan of.
Oh, great guy. What's
yeah,
that?
He
listen. What's wrong with his? Did is he had some kind of throat problem or something?
Okay, here's my assumption.
Okay.
You know that he had a little bit of a misspent youth back a couple decades ago, right?
Okay.
And when one messes around with things like heroin, which I do believe he had a stint with that he knocked decades ago.
Seems like I remember that. Yeah.
It scars the throat from the vomiting. And the voice ends up becoming crippled. And if you ever go or are ever around a community like when I lived in an area of Sydney here that was in amongst the poorest of the Aboriginals, there are a whole bunch of the elders that had that very, very same type of voice. And it's suspected that that's from the scarring that happens to the vocal cords from the abuse of heroin. But, you know, just like, you know, I hate when people who have beaten these kind of monkeys over their lives end up being twisted by the right wing as being some sort of low life. I look at this as someone had fallen for whatever reason, you know, and that family went through hell. I mean, bloody hell, his father was killed after his uncle was killed.
Oh, my God.
You know, you can only imagine where this youngest of the children would have ended up, you know, emotionally. And so he fell into this pit that many people have fallen into. And to actually shake the monkey and then move forward with one's life as stoically as this guy has can only be honored. Because, you know, he hasn't gone off on some sort of weird wacko type of, you know, campaign. He's gotten very, very focused in his adult life and has done some amazing work. And not to mention his research for that piece in the Rolling Stone this past week was fantastic.
Yes, it was. And, no, he's, well, and you know, what's he doing? He's working for the common good, for the common people. Yeah. You know, just like, his Uncle Ted. I don't put up with Kennedy bashing. It's just... I think, like I say, the children of, well, they've done some amazing things. Carolyn Kennedy.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, I think they're good people. And, you know, you can, that's perfect proof that you can redeem yourself. And, you know, that's what they've done. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, remember that. The Employees Free Choice Act. And like I say, to date, there's 200 co-sponsors to this legislation. And if the Democrats get in a majority, then they have to pass it. They have to pass it. Yeah, I'm going to tell you what, if that law is passed, in a matter of 5 years, you will see 50 million more union members. No, I would bet money on that. Because the way the system is set up now, the employees can threaten to fire, they can threaten to close the company, they, you know, it's against the law, but they do all those things.
Oh, yeah. It's against the law,
but they do all those things. And with this new legislation, without having to go to election, see, because there's a point where when you're going for election that most of the people are exposed. You know, then that's when the employer, you know, starts firing people and harassing people and stuff like that. You try to keep it as secret as possible, but, you know, when there are months between the time the majority of people sign cards and an election, they can really harass these people. And so a lot of people will not sign a card for that simple reason. I mean, I think the AFL-CIO has done a survey that said there's something like, if it weren't for fear of losing their job, 57 million people would join a union tomorrow.
You just beat me to what I've been holding in my head as you've been speaking. It's only because of the fear that's put into new employees of their employer that they don't join a union.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And you know, I mean, if the employer is such a stand-up guy, what are you worried about?
Well, and listen, you know, I mean, a lot of the employers cry that they can't afford it. Well, there are laws, you know, there are rules and laws that govern that, too. You know, if we are demanding in a contract that you pay $20 an hour, and the employer says, I can't run a business like that. If I do that, I'll go bankrupt and I'll be out of business. Well, then we just simply say to them, well, open the books, prove that. And if you could prove that, then we won't demand $20 an hour. Guess what they won't do?
Open the books.
Exactly. You know, which means they're lying.
It's a scam. It's always been a scam. Because when they brought in this whole individual contract thing down here, I was an employee of the casino, massive complex. I worked in one of the theaters. I was part of the binding agreement that the hotel workers, who were the majority of the workers on the place, got for everybody. Then in the middle of the night, they passed, just for the music industry, this private contract thing, and suddenly, in a day, I was being paid $1 more per hour with the new contract, which sounds fine, but suddenly I had to produce my own workman's comp insurance, my own public liability, and the venue now was no longer charging $94 an hour for my time, which I was getting $31.
Right. That sounds.
And this happens to be with a lot of big outfits do this. They say we can't afford that, but they end up inflating the rates of these employees that they supply for services in their company, and they say, well, this guy cost me $120 an hour. Well, you've only paid him $35.
Yeah. How do you figure this? Listen, employees don't want to put their companies – I mean, you know – this thing about employees wanting to put their companies out of business, what a bunch of crap that is. Who the hell wants their company to go out of business? If they go out of business, they don't have a job. All they want to be is treated fairly. And, you know, like I've said many times, if a person's willing to go to work every day sober and give that employer a good 8, 10, whatever hours it is, and do them a good job and make them money, it is not too much for that employee to ask to make a living wage, to have health insurance for he or she and their family, and to be able to retire with dignity. That is not too much to ask. and it's time that people start asking for it.
Absolutely. And if they don't want to open up the books, you know, and they say that they can't afford to pay it because it'll put them out of business, well, if you have to pay below living wage wages in which to stay in business, I actually don't think you have the right to stay in business. Your business is not then viable.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. And listen, you know, union people, people that make a living wage, people that have health insurance, people that are able to retire with dignity do not become a burden to society. No, it's just that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, Joe Vecchio, who comes on before us, you know, talks about, and I don't necessarily agree with everything he has to say, but
I still reckon
he's got a bloody point on the idea that we need a global worker standard.
Oh, and I agree with you 100%. Listen, that's the whole problem with the immigration problem. Is Bruce still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, that's the whole immigration problem is a product of NAFTA. It's a product of these free trade agreements. You know, in original NAFTA, it was supposed to, you know, all boats raised with a high tide or whatever the hell they say. You know, that was supposed to improve working conditions and wages for Mexican workers. And if, in fact, they did that, the Mexican people would not be coming here to try to get a better job. In fact, it lowered the wages of the average Mexican worker. There are, I forget what the statistic is, I think there are 19 million more people in Mexico living in poverty since NAFTA was passed than there was before. And, you know, and where did these trade agreements? Well, you know, Clinton was a big part of it. But this is all motivated by these greedy, you know, cheap labor Republicans. And, you know, well, there's Democrats involved in it also. But, you know, that's the whole problem there. If those people can make a decent living, a living wage in Mexico, what the hell would they want to come here for? Why would they want to leave their families? And, you know, if we had a standard, a world standard for workers' rights, we wouldn't have the problems we have. And, you know, and I know, well, you know, you guys get me on a soapbox and I feel like I take up too much time sometimes. But
that's all right.
If you take care, you know, and I've said this before, the world has a what seems to be a insurmountable part number of problems. But if you took care, if you take care of the working people, you would be absolutely amazed at the amount of problems that somehow seem to solve themselves.
You're not kidding, Wayne. You're not kidding. And with that, I'm going to pull you off your soapbox because we need to wrap things up and do the housekeeping because we're just about out of time, mate.
Oh,
but always love having you ring in, man.
In the morning.
Yes, it is, man. We've had you on for, what, 40 minutes or something like that? But that's great, man, because you are our connection to what is happening with the worker struggle. And I didn't even get to my story about Bank of America employees being told that they have to train their Indian replacements. Maybe we'll get to that one next week. But,
oh, wow, that's
you know,
that's a real happy workplace.
Oh, yeah, and it's being used as a leverage arm saying you won't get your redundancy benefits unless you train your replacement. But that could be for next week.
Yes, I would say so. Good night, John.
Right on, Wayne.
It's been a pleasure.
Good night, mate. Thank you so much, and we'll probably talk to you next week.
Okay, man. Bye.
All righty, and we're just about on the end of this thing, Bruce. What a show. We hammered Zarqawi. We talked about Guantanamo. We've done almost an hour with Wayne, the union man.
What better than this?
No, man, no. It really doesn't. And I'm so looking forward to the debut of your new show on Monday, and to be able to have this passing of the baton straight through the afternoon and evening on our network is going to be just a very, very cool thing. And just to run through the credits, the show is produced wonderfully by Agnes the Great in West Virginia, who is finally in the company of her long-traveling husband, Mr. Bob Kincaid, who's just finally gotten home. Welcome home, Bob. I know your family missed you. The show was announced by Gail Thomas. The streaming, of course, is handled by the White Rose Society, and this show and every show on the Head On Radio Network is brought to you by the District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights from West Virginia. I always flip that thing around. It's such a long title, Bruce.
It's okay. Let's see. What else?
We got all this new stuff happening on the horn. I just hope everybody tunes in.
All this new stuff. Peter Godbold handles our computer situation and networks there at the studios of the Head On Radio Network. John Fox, who is opposite me and down there, down under, is our chief engineer. So thank you, John, for doing that. Everybody, if you're interested, go check out my new website, brucebirch.com. Leave me a message there. Go check it out. Let's see. I think that's pretty much it, John, except for one final little item. You want to take care of that?
Yep, and as usual, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in again. We love coming to you every Saturday night here on Fourth Estate Radio. Watch your backs, watch each other's backs. We're fighting to get back America. Don't forget about Bruce's final All Things tomorrow and the debut of the new Bruce Birch radio program on Monday. You've been listening to Fourth Estate Radio, and as always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. Good night. I might get burned up by the sun.